For take heed that what happened to them does not happen to you. Got that? That was the Apostle Paul in the New Testament. Thanks for joining us. Get a copy of Out of Egypt, A Prophetic Call to the End Time Church. You're going to get to $17 or more to Save America Ministries, $16 to Save America Ministries. We'll put it in your hands. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us. Get it on our website, saveus.org. Become a partner. Send your gifts by faith, my good friend, to Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. God bless you. Remember, we walk by faith, not by sight.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western civilization and Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Buck Keeley, who's a master gardener, who actually sells seeds and fertilizers and has been certainly growing things commercially for a long period of time. And I'll tell you, I've learned a lot from Duck, and I know my friends have. I have never seen as many tomatoes on a tomato plant as we've had this year. Of course, I listened to Buck. We prepared the soil properly before we planted the tomato plants, and we've certainly done what he suggested since that time. And all of our other items that we're growing, and of course we have to do container growing because where we live, but they're really doing amazingly well. And of course we have Buck on, first of all, because he does help Radio Liberty, but secondly, because we think that you need to know how to begin to grow. And so my best friend I had lunch with just the other day, and he told me that he'd been listening to Buck. He'd done what Buck had said, and he has plants like you can't believe and never seen before. In fact, he brought me some of his squash, and summer squash is really just beautiful. Well, anyway, Chris Buck, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my privilege, Dr. Stan.
Well, let's see. Now, of course, people should have most of their plants in. Is there still time to plant things like peas and beans and lettuce, or would we have to wait till the fall, or what? What should we be doing at the present time? And how will people understand what these various zones are that you talk about?
But most of the areas now that you move through your cool weather crops into your summer crop, but there are still some of the northern zones that could still get in their early crops like lettuce and radishes and broccoli and things like that. But most of the areas are moving into their summer crop zones. And we talk about the zone chart. What we're talking about is the USDA zone chart. And over a period of years, what they've done is they've tracked the weather, and they have tracked the last known frost date average. And so depending what region of the country, and then there's microclimate as well in the region. For an example, where we live, within a 10-mile radius, there's three different growing zones because of microclimates, where either you're on the downhill side of a mountain where the cold air sweeps over, and you miss those dips down by 2 or 3 degrees and moves you up a zone, or you're up a 1,000, 1,500 foot higher, and you catch those colder zones. So you want to be very astute about checking what zone you're in, so you know when to put out your plants. And the key is, this is the last known frost date average. And that's where you make the determination what plants you put in. Those that go in previous to that last known zone, like peas or lettuces or radishes or potatoes or onions, or those that go in after that last frost date, such as your squash and your peppers and tomatoes. So knowing your zone you're in is very important. It's easy to find out if you'll go to our website, and you'll click on any of the categories of seeds, tomatoes, or peppers, or broccoli, or whatever the category is. There will be a link on there. It'll take you to a zone chart that will show you what part of the country you're in and what zone you're in. And that's how you determine when you plant your plant.
And basically, of course, my son put in his potatoes. We had potatoes last year. It's just a tremendous amount of potatoes that you can grow in a fairly small area. In fact, he actually plants his in canvas sacks. But they grow and they do just beautifully. And all of these things, why is this important? Well, because we could come to a point where there is no food in the stores. Am I saying it's going to happen? I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. But I do know that the elite are preparing. The elite have all sorts of underground facilities. The elite certainly are stocking up on food. And the elite have purchased an awful lot of ammunition. You think that's maybe for you? No, maybe that's to defend themselves. Did you ever stop and think of that? We'll be back in just a moment with Buck Keeley, and give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients, or the Mighty 90, needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Disaster can strike at any time. That's why Americans spend billions on insurance policies. But what about investing into disaster preparedness supplies, especially food? After Hurricane Sandy, people waited weeks for help to arrive. Be prepared for anything with Mountain House freeze-dried foods, the finest in the industry, packed in heavy-duty double enamel number 10 cans with over 99% of the oxygen removed for the longest shelf life of any product available. And the taste, absolutely delicious. Entrees, meats, vegetables, fruits, and desserts made in the USA. Just add hot water, wait 10 minutes, and serve. Save 25% on Mountain House number 10 cans, April 2nd through the 8th, with free shipping to the lower 48 states. Visit freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. 866-404-3663. Get 25% off April 2nd through the 8th. Act today. Don't miss out.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Buck Keeley, a master gardener. And if you have a question about gardening or anything on this, in respect to this, why, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But Buck was simply saying, look, if you're going to be growing things like lettuce and parsley and certainly things that certainly carrots, why, they're not going to put out just a very short crop. They don't have a lot of foliage with them, and so they don't need a lot of nutrition. But if you're thinking certainly about your your squash, you know, and you're going to put out a lot of squash. They need a lot of nutrition. Your tomatoes need a lot of nutrition, especially as they put on more and more tomatoes. Where does the material come from that goes into the tomatoes? Where does the material come from that goes into the cucumbers, zucchini, or hookneck squash? You need to fertilize it. First of all, of course, you should have had your soil prepared, well composed, lots of manure in it. But then, of course, now that they're growing, why, of course, you have to use your mind and remember, so the tomatoes don't come out of nothing. They have to come out of the nutrition that comes out of the ground. And so they do need to be fertilized. And I was asking Buck about the various types of fertilizers. There's lots of fertilizers out there. Now, do not get fertilizer and manure mixed up. They're entirely different. But certainly, what about certainly the fertilizers? We go to the big box stores, they talk about 666, things of that sort, and how important are they? What about the different types of fertilizers? What should people be using? Our telephone number, if you have a question for Buck, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But remember, if you're going to be growing vegetables, if you're going to be growing products, why the material that goes into those products is what goes into your body. And it has to come from someplace, and that's where it comes, where the fertilizers come in. Go right ahead, Buck.
Well, you had mentioned, Jill, earlier the importance of building your soil. If you've built your soil, fertilizer becomes less and less important. That fertilizer plays a very big role in corporate farming because they do not build the soil. They deplete the soil, and they replenish the nutrients with total carbon fertilizers in order to grow the product. And it's, the soil has almost come to the point it's sterile, and they put the composite form of the nutrient needs for that plant into the ground that grows the plant. And so the whole idea of fertilizing is something that is new in the generations of American farmers, that a few generations ago that the main thing they did is build their soil. So let me encourage your listeners to start now. This is the time you start building your compost pile. In your compost pile, you put organic material, nitrogen and carbon. Carbon is brown, nitrogen is green, and about a 80-20% ratio of green to brown, brown being the 80%. And put in dead leaves, cardboard, household waste from the vegetables if you have chicken coops or other animals, the manure in that, build your compost pile now and let it cook during the summer and then into the winter. And next year, put that down in your garden for your plant, and you'll have an unbelievable garden. So build your soil and then fertilize your plant. Plants that you give them the extra boost, like we were talking about, the high production plants like a cucumber plant or a zucchini plant, you can give it an extra boost. You can increase your harvest and have larger and better fruit by fertilizing your plant with a good natural fertilizer. And what a good natural fertilizer is, a good organic fertilizer, is basically you're going to put in seed meal, which is seed such as cotton meal seed or sunflower seed that's had the oil pressed out of it for other purposes, and the leftover residue is vegetable matter that has been dried out by the pressing process. And if you'll take that and put it with bone meal and add to that a dolomite lime. All these are readily available at your local grain store. You can put together your own fertilizer. Now, you don't have to be a chemist to do it, but there's a little bit of intuition on how to put it together. We also sell one that's already put together for you, but anybody can build their own natural fertilizer if they just take the time to do it.
All right. Now, basically, what should be in this fertilizer if we were going to do this on our own, if we, for one reason or another, couldn't reach you? What should be in this fertilizer that we're going to be putting on our vegetables?
Yeah, it's very important that there may be a time where you can't buy things like from a seed catalog to be able to put these things together for yourself. And so having organic matter, and I mentioned this, for example, cottonmeal seed or sunflower seed meal, that those kind of things are you can buy at the store in their bags. But you can do the same thing by taking organic matter, whether it's leaves off of your tree or the leftovers out of your garden, and drying them and then breaking them down and adding them with things like bone meal. Now, bone meal is something you buy commercially in a bag, but you can also take your food products your leftover chicken bones and pork bones and beef bones, and you just you pound them up. You put them in a canvas bag with a mold, and you beat those. You grind them up into smaller pieces. You mix them in with your vegetable matter, and if you get a hold of lime, lime is a good balance, a dolomite lime. If you can't get a hold of that, use a little Epsom salt, and those things put together there will help advance your plants. Epsom salt, by the way, is a good source for your garden. Not in excess, but a couple of tablespoons on your plants really helps it break down the carbon matter. So those kind of things that you can do for yourself if things are where you can't purchase them, or if you're interested in becoming more sustainable and self-sufficient. And I encourage your readers, I'm not trying to drive a business away. You know, I make a living doing this. But at the same time, a part of what I'm trying to do is educate people so that when the unthinkable happens, they're not dependent on me or anybody else to be able to maintain their garden.
So what's the most important thing? Is it the calcium that's in there and does have to do with the pH that's in the fertilizer? Cindy, what are the important, you've already talked about the calcium, whether it be dolomite or lime, things of that sort. And then Cindy's you mentioned you could grind up bones, things like that. But those are all for calcium. Are there other things that we need to have in the fertilizer?
Yeah, the bones provide a phosphate into the soil, which is very important. Your seed mill or organic material that's dried out provides nitrogen. And it also provides phosphorus as well to a smaller degree. And the dolomite lime is a longer, slow-releasing phosphorus and a little bit of nitrogen as well, and it builds the soil. And so, but the three most important nutrients in the soil are, of course, your nitrogen. Depending on the plant you're growing, such as peas or corn, onions or garlic, takes a larger portion of nitrogen. The dark green plant have a greater nitrogen use than the light green or the colored plant. So the nitrogen is a crucial part of the fertilizer. So when you see on the commercial fertilizers a 666, that first number is phosphorus. And the second is the potassium. And the third is, I just lost the third out of I got old here real quickly, Dr. Stan. I apologize. Potassium, phosphorus, and nitrate. And so the third is potassium. And so all of these are found in natural organic materials that occur in the gardens. And what we do is we advance that with fertilizer by taking those materials, dehydrating them, combining them together, and adding them directly to the plant's base. But when you to come back once again to building your soil, the same basic thing we're talking about in the fertilizer is what you're doing in your compost pile. You're providing those three basic ingredients in a less concentrated form.
Well, now, basically, when you set the compost pile out there, we have our compost pile, but should we have some sort of a tarp over that? Would that facilitate it? In other words, make it much hotter so the material would rot more rapidly?
Yes, there's three basic types of composting: container composting, open composting, and covered composting. And if you're looking to accelerate the deterioration of the organic material, in other words, composting faster, or if you're concerned about having weed seed, for an example, if you've added into your compost pile horse manure. Horse manure is notorious for providing weed seed into your compost, which will grow in your garden because the way the horse digestive system works, it doesn't completely digest the seed such as a cow's will. And so what you'll do is you'll put your nitrogen, your carbon together. And the nitrogen is what gives the compost pile heat. So that's the green, the grass clippings, the green weeds you pull out of your garden, the leftover plants at the end of the season. That the green material is what provides heat to the compost. So when you get the compost pile set with your carbon and your nitrogen, wet it down. You don't want it sopping wet, but you want to wet it down so it's damp, and then throw a tarp over it. What will happen is it'll hold that heat into the compost pile. It'll get up to 140 degrees and higher, and what it'll do is it'll kill all of the weed seeds that's in your compost pile, and it accelerates your composting. Open composting will take about 8 to 10 months. So if you have a compost pile like we keep in the back of our garden, our compost pile is around 10 or 12 foot high right now and about 50 foot diameter. and it's open. And we just keep adding to it and adding to it. And at the end of the year, what we'll do is we'll pull black plastic over that and weight it down. And by the time that springtime comes, that compost pile will be about 8 foot high and about 30 foot across, and it'll be all that organic material broke down into very fine particulate. But along with that, all of the weed seed, anything that has seed, whether it comes from horse manure or from weeds you put on the pile, will be dead, and it won't hurt your soil.
Now, what about putting newspapers into the compost pile? Is that a good or bad idea?
That's a great idea. Newspapers and cardboard, none of that goes to the recycling or the trash for us. It goes to our compost pile. Some folks have expressed interest over the or concern over the ink. The ink on all of the newspaper and the cardboard is soy-based. It is not harmful. It's not toxic. And it'll not hurt your compost pile or you when it goes in your plant.
Okay, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is Buck Keeley. Do you have questions or comments? Why give us a call? But I think it's important. I think everybody out there should begin thinking along this line. What would happen if things were to change and change dramatically? We'll be back in just a moment here.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and get back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do all to yourself. Being free of diseases, real well. Home for Health.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging, Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now, 1-866-405-4000. 405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. 800-800-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
This is Dr. Stan, and our guest is, of course, Buck Keeley, and our lines are open if you'd like to call us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Buck was saying that certainly you can get as much trouble from overwatering as you can from underwatering. And you know, for instance, when you're overwatering, because the tomato plants begin to put, and pepper plants begin to put on yellow leaves. And when you see those yellow leaves, it means you get too much water. What you want, basically, are better to underwater to stress the plant so that their roots will grow down deeper. And basically, you want to just go down, suddenly you can plunge your finger into the certainly into the ground, and certainly if it's wet above, is it at 3 inches? If it's dry at 3 inches, is that the time you want to water?
Yeah, at about 3 inches deep, if there's not damp moisture there or enough that you can feel the moisture, then it's a good time to water.
Okay, fine. Well, we've got Charlie calling us from Cincinnati, Ohio. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464. Hi, Charlie. How are we doing?
Okay. I got a question. When you go to the store, you see all the seeds in the racks. You know, the box stores. Are the seeds genetically? How do you know which ones are genetically modified and which ones are not?
Excellent
question.
Did they
tell you?
Well, the big box stores, when you go in there, Buck, and you see all these seeds, how do you know whether they're genetically modified or not?
But the vegetable seeds, there are very few genetically modified, commercially available vegetable seeds. The enemy right now in the vegetable market is not the GMO seed, although it's moving that way. The threat in the vegetable market is the hybrid seed, and that is seeds that have been genetically altered by multiple parents, not by genome splicing, but by providing multiple parents into the same seed. And what happens is when they do that product it produces with multiple parents will not produce fruit from the seeds it's harvested. So if you plant a tomato plant on one of these hyper-hybrid seeds, for an example, all of your sweet corns, any of your super sweet corns that are out there, are not genetically modified. They're hyper-hybrid. None of them can you replant the seeds off of that corn and get any product at all.
And I think that's really such an important issue, Charlie. I didn't understand that myself. So it's not that they genetically modified them by GMO techniques, but they actually modified them by the breeding process so that they won't reproduce. You'll get a great crop the first year, but the second year, you're not going to get much of anything. Would that be a fair assessment, Buck?
Yes, on these seeds that you'll get a plant, and you may get some kind of product on the plant, but it'll not resemble anything like what you planted, if it does. And it's because if these seeds are pollinated underneath laboratory conditions, they cannot pollinate under open conditions. And that's why it's important to buy heirloom seeds. That's all we sell. We had one of our customers from Dr. Stan's show that we did last week that ordered a couple of seed banks from us. And she sent me an email and she said, "You stand by your word, these are not genetically modified." And, you know, we emailed back and told her, of course they're not. But even more importantly than that, these seeds are heirloom seeds. That means that they will reproduce like kinds generation after generation after generation. And if you're going to be sustainable and renewable, if you're going to be able to provide for yourself off of the grid without having supply trucks come to you, you got to have heirloom seeds. Otherwise, you don't know what you're going to have. So I would, anybody that's buying seeds, to put in their gardens or to store seed. And it's important for you to have storage for seed. Seed banks are the ultimate source of security.
Well, why don't you just put in certainly a plug and tell our listeners how they can get your products. And incidentally, Charlie, you hang on there. If you're over in the listening audience, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But before we get to the break, why don't you tell our listeners how they can reach you, Buck?
Well, it's, if you got access to the internet, you can go to seedcatalog.com. That's all one word, seedcatalog.com. And there you're going to find a lot of good information on genetically modified seeds and hybrid seeds. Click on Shop on Seeds. That'll take you into our store. And there you're going to find a variety of things, everything from what we call value packs to single packs of seeds. But most importantly, for folks who are preparing for the unknown, is the seed bank. We have most of Dr. Stan's listeners who order our seed banks are ordering two. One for themselves, they store to plant, and one they have to barter or to trade. When the times gets where that we need to have the ability to barter and not buy because the dollar's not going to have the ability to purchase. So seedcatalog.com, or you can go to your phone, give us a call at our toll-free number. Our toll-free number is 1-888-866-9132. That'll take you to our office, and Ms. Suze will be glad to help you get an order in.
One more time, get the telephone number out.
Our telephone number is 1-888-866-9132.
Hi, this is George Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden, all heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid that is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Buck Keeley, a master gardener, and we have Charlie on the line from Cincinnati. And he was going to ask, of course, is it too late for putting in tomatoes? Now, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But certainly, what Buck talks about is the importance of composting. And you should be composting right now for next year. And you put in, whether you put in newspaper, cardboard, whether you put in green material or dried leaves, whatever it would be. And you can even add manure to that. But then you leap, basically, down the line, you're going to throw a tarp over the top of it or block plastic. And basically, it'll get very, very hot in there and it'll kill any organisms. Oh, but of course, the worms and certainly the it'll kill viruses or anything harmful, but there'll be all sorts of bacteria in there. And suddenly, it'll simply just create all this wonderful new compost soil, which is ideal for growing. That's the key to growing, is adequately composted soil that you have for next year, and you should be preparing it right now. Charlie, do you have another question?
I live in the Ohio Valley, and we were so busy we didn't get to plant tomatoes, you know, from seeds or whatever. Could you? We still go to a big box store and put them in? Wouldn't be too late, would it?
Well, if they're still selling the plant start, it's not too late to put them in. Most of your tomatoes are going to span from 55 to 85 days to maturity to production. So you've lost some time that the plants that you're going to put in the ground are not going to be wholesome and hardy plants. It's going to take a while for that to happen. But you know that if I get one ripe tomato, it's worth putting in a plant. But if you catch your first frost and you have green tomatoes on your plant, pull those tomatoes up by the roots. Take them and hang them upside down in your basement or in some place that doesn't freeze, and they will ripen off. They're not quite as good as actual vine-ripened tomatoes, but you'll have tomatoes for another 30 days coming off those plants just by hanging them upside down in a place that's just above freezing.
Okay, anything else, Charlie?
When you buy the plants, how do you know they're not genetically modified?
Well, if you're buying the plants from a warehouse store, chances are they'll be hyper-hybrid. So if you go to the big box store, chances are they're going to be hyper-hybrid. Your best chance of getting a plant that is not hyper-hybrid is going to a local grower, a local grange or greenhouse that grows the heirloom plant. But most likely, if you go to the big box store, you're going to get a hyper-hybrid plant.
And I think you have to separate a hyper-hybrid from a genetically modified. And right now, they're not really genetically modifying most of our plants. In other words, the vegetables, what they're doing, of course, they've genetically modified the corn and the soy and the canola and the cottonseed. And they're getting into genetically modified wheat and other things like that. And I'm sure they may be working on it, but they're not genetically modified vegetable plants, at least. Not very many of them right at the present time, and certainly this is not a problem with tomatoes as far as Buck is concerned. Anything else, Charlie, before we let you go?
I think that's it. I appreciate very much for your help.
Okay, fine. Do you listen to the program regularly there in Cincinnati?
Oh, yeah, almost every night.
Okay, well, you get the rest of the people there listening, okay?
All right, thank you.
God bless. Okay. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. You got a question, you got a comment, why? Certainly Buck has the answers. And basically, I've learned so much just from talking to Buck here over the last year before. But Buck, this is a different audience than we've talked to before. But certainly last week when we had you on another program, somebody called in and they asked the question, well, have you had any harassment at all? Basically, of course, you know, here you're telling people a great deal of information about how to grow, how to actually be able to provide for yourself. And I would like you to share, if you don't mind, with our listeners, the answer that you gave. I know the answer because, of course, I've talked to your wife and about what has befallen you, but this is an incredible, incredible story. And you hear this and you wonder, what in heaven's name is going on? Have you had any harassment at all as you try to educate people about how to look after themselves and provide for themselves if there's some sort of a catastrophic event?
Well, when we decided to go internet for our business and selling the seed, we engaged a market where we came on the radar, where we're not just a mom and pop that's selling locally. But now we move to a national, even to a international level. We sell seed to multiple nations around the country. But what happened is that 2 years ago, we were attacked by what is called a black ops backlink. And it's where there are very sophisticated computer hackers that attack your website. We went from being on page one on the Google, Yahoo, and Bing searches to page 50 overnight because of these backlinkings they were doing. It took us a while to figure out what was going on. And so we hired programmers to correct that and put security in place, and we began to climb back up in the ratings. And the next year, which was this year, we were attacked again, and this time it was through malware, where they invaded our site through denial of service attacks, opened up issues through ports, and then they attacked us with malware, which caused Google to completely ban us. If you went to our site a few months ago, you'd see a big red warning that this site has malware. And they moved us down to page 500. We went completely off the website. We hired a new set of security people, and they've now got that taken care of, and we're now moving back up into the Google ratings again. But there's both years, as we begin to grow and become more prominent in the marketplace with the information we're sharing, we were attacked. Now, we don't know who did it. We don't know whether it was a competitor, whether it was a foreign entity such as China or Czechoslovakia, who are notorious for what they're doing on the web, whether it was another entity, whether it's a commercial, we don't know. All we know is that when we begin to have a presence where we were able to distribute our information, we were attacked and taken down. And so we're going again at this again this year. We spent thousands and thousands of dollars getting our site hardened to where that we have the security principles in place, and hopefully they can't again attack us and bring us down. But we're hoping that by the time we get through this last set of security measures, that we'll be back where our message is catching more than Dr. Stan's show and a couple other places, but we're able to once again, when you search for genetically modified seeds or for hyper-hybrid seeds or for heirloom seeds, that you're able to find our information to help you make decisions.
Now, why don't you just put out your website so once again, so people will know how to get to your website, and of course, the alternative would be the telephone number, so they actually be able to reach you.
Our seedcatalog.com is easy to find. Go to your favorite web browser, type into the address bar seedcatalog.com, seedcatalog.com, all one word. It'll take you to our storefront. There you're going to find some very interesting articles on genetically modified foods, as well as the danger for hyper-hybrid plants, the importance of heirloom seeds. And once again, I cannot stress enough, if you're going to buy seeds, buy heirloom seeds, whether they're from us or somebody else, buy heirloom seeds. Or you can reach us on the telephone at a toll-free number. This toll-free number is 1-888-866-9132, 1-888-866-9132. We are a small family-owned business, so if you don't get us on the phone immediately, leave a message, and Ms. Susan will get back to you as soon as possible.
Now, didn't you say something about they were able to track where this attack was coming from, to Russia or someplace like that?
Yes, the first attack that came with the Black Ops backlinks was out of Russia, that there was numerous IP addresses where they were hacking our site out of Russia itself. But that doesn't mean anything, that they hired these foreign hackers. Whether it's a commercial entity or a governmental agency, they hire these people to do it so the footprints don't lead back to them. And so there are these mercenaries out there on the web who hire themselves out to become agents for someone where you can't track who's actually doing it. And then we also had our second attack came out of Czechoslovakia. There was numerous IP addresses tracked into our website. And once again, it's these black ops guys that are mercenaries who are hired out by entities to hack the website. And if you've been listening to the news lately, you know that not only are the foreign entities doing it, we're doing it as Americans, the foreign entities. And so there are these folks that you can hire for not much money. They work for pittance because there's not much income over there. And all they do is they sit all day and try to find holes in your website that they can attack you and bring it down. So once again, we don't know who is the sponsor of this. We know where it came from, but we don't know who the sponsor was that caused it to actually take place.
Well, I think it's just very interesting. Of course, we live in a crazy world, and I've been at this for 50 years, and I've seen a lot of crazy things. And why I've never been, well, maybe we have been, but certainly we don't depend upon our website, although it is there, and we do know. people know how to get to it. But of course, they don't get to it necessarily primarily from Google or from one of the other search engines. They get to it because they know certainly what the title of our organization is. Well, let's talk a little bit about the seed banks that you offer. What is in these? Because basically, ladies and gentlemen, well, of course, one of the things that Buck does offer are certainly these various seed banks, a small, medium, large, or certainly very a selective one. But basically, the whole idea is that you will actually have heirloom seeds. Now, the advantage of an heirloom seed is that if you plant it, you can collect the seeds and dry them out and plant them again the next year, you get the same product. If it has been one of the hyper hybrid seeds like you buy at the big box stores, why, of course, you can plant them and you get a beautiful plant this year, but you dry out the seeds, and next year, why, you plant those seeds and it doesn't come up with the same products at all, or certainly it may not be productive at all. So this is the advantage of staying with the heirloom seeds. Now, tell our listeners what you are actually offering. You have various types of products there. And basically, should they get the small one? Should they get the large one? Should they get the selective one? And how is it packaged? And how should it be stored?
But the seed banks are the ultimate protection against the unknown. And what we do is we take, we have three different types of seed banks. One is a basic, which will plant over a garden. One is a personal, which will plant about a half-acre garden, and then we'll let you build your own if you buy more than $50 worth of seed. So that's the three seed banks we offer. What we do is we take the seed, and we pack them into a Mylar bag. A Mylar bag is a metallicized bag that's impervious to light, insects, and moisture. So we take the seeds that are in their individual packets, we put them inside the Mylar, we seal them inside the Mylar, and then we put them inside a tri-wall PVC pipe. And the Tri-Wall PVC pipe is a rubberized PVC that is flexible, so that if it got run over by a car, it flexes, it doesn't break. Regular PVC would break. And so we put it in a PVC pipe, we seal the ends up where no moisture, insects, or any rodent can get into it. And that protects your seed against moisture and light. And what you do is then is you protect it against heat. Put it in your freezer, put it in your refrigerator, dig a hole a couple of foot deep in your backyard, cover it up so it maintains a temperature that's below 70 degrees. If you do that, these seeds will be good for up to 90% germination rate after 20 years. So you provide a long-term storage for the seed. I was asked not too long ago by one of your listeners who bought one of our banks, what if nothing really happens that I need to use this bank in an emergency? What if we, in a year or 2 years, find out everything's rosy? And I said, well, cut it open and plant a garden. The seed's never going to be bad. You always be able to plant a garden with it. So it's not a loss ever, because those seeds are going to be planted and used. And like I said earlier, most of your listeners are ordering two now. That this past year, most of the listeners were ordering one. This year, many, many of your listeners are ordering two. And they're ordering one for themselves, for their future, their garden, and they're ordering one so if things get bad, they're able not just to barter the seeds for other goods and services, but be able to help other people out as well. And so once again, there's no waste in these seeds. The seeds are going to remain good with high germination rates up to 20 years if you properly store them once you get them and keep them at your home for that ultimate security. And in a year or two from now, if you see that things are looking good and you think, well, I think I'll plant a garden, plant a garden. You won't lose anything. But the security of knowing that you not just have food that's for today and for tomorrow, where you have your dry, dehydrated foods or your prepared food, but you have food for generations. Food that if you need to, you can plant a garden, harvest seeds, and every year plant a garden after that. That is an important security everybody needs to have.
And, you know, basically, Chris, doing what I do, why I get a chance to talk to a lot of fascinating people. I had a chance to spend a fair amount of time with a gentleman who worked for Congress. He actually was the executive director of two congressional investigations on the threat of an EMP attack. And basically, one of the things he told me, we'd chat before we do our interviews, and I was asking him what nations are already prepared for an EMP attack. And of course, we have no preparation. We've known of the danger for well over a decade and a half, and every effort to correct this situation has been effectively blocked. And it doesn't make sense because one bomb or one explosion over Omaha, Nebraska, or one massive solar flare would simply wipe out the infrastructure of America instantaneously, and America would certainly not have no electricity for 2, 3, 4 years. If you saw this program that they had on television called Revolution, it was on NBC. It ran for a year. It's going to be coming back again, incidentally. But it was all about certainly what happens to America when the electricity goes off and the total breakdown of the structure of society. But what this Peter Pry told me was the fact that Russia and China have hardened their electric grids. This would not affect them, but they have massive underground facilities in Russia where hundreds of thousands of people would be protected. Now, they have them here in America too, but not for hundreds of thousands. Probably for thousands, because there are a few thousand in the elite. They have made preparations for themselves on the East Coast, the West Coast, and the central part of America for a few thousand people, but not for the general public. There are no supplies for the public. Certainly, the supplies we've had in the past have been done away with, except for the elite. A couple of years ago, they laid in massive supplies of freeze-dried food. They're laying in massive supplies of ammunition. Did you ever stop and think, maybe the ammunition is simply to protect themselves? They know there's going to be a major catastrophic event out there, but you're not hearing this regularly. Your attention is being focused on basketball. Your focus is being focused on a gay basketball player, and they manipulate what you think about. Well, I think you ought to think about survival. Our guest is Buck Keeley. Buck, one more time, the telephone number.
You can reach us at 1-888-866-9132, 1-888-866-9132, or on your web browser at steepcatalog.com.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and give back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do what you said. Being free of diseases, real well. Home for Health.
There is a disturbing trend here in these United States that is progressing unnoticed and without constraint. From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we have seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. Our founding fathers designed our three-part governmental system to have checks and balances upon each other. Each branch of the government has now taken upon itself power that was never intended for it to have. The judicial branch in particular needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. There you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes prostate support and recommends it. And thousands of men take prostate support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try prostate support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for prostate support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
God bless. And thank you so very much for calling. Thank you so much, Buck, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Bless you, Buck, Stan.
Okay, that was Buck Keeley, and certainly Buck was just saying, you know, lay in this, lay in your seeds, lay in your fertilizers, have them available, hope and pray that that basically nothing happens. But I will tell you, I am concerned. If you have not heard the DVD we have on the threat of an EMP attack, you need to get it. If you've not heard the 4-CD set we have on the threat of an EMP attack, you need to get it. Certainly we have a book, it's called A Nation Forsaken. Is written by Michael Maloof, 30 years with the Defense Department. He writes now on a regular basis for WorldNet Daily. And WorldNet Daily, Joseph Ferris, WorldNet Daily is doing everything they can to get the American people to realize this is not an imaginary threat. It's a very real threat. And 1 second, it could happen tonight. It could happen tomorrow. It may never happen. We don't know. But I will tell you that there are people there, very well-informed people like James Woolsey, former director of the CIA, former ambassador, and he wrote an article, I believe it was the 21st of May, and it was in the Wall Street Journal. He and Peter Pry wrote an article together talking about the very real danger. Then the following day, Frank Gaffney wrote an article that appeared in the Washington Times, and not a peep out of the mass-controlled medium, but both of them are talking about the massive devastation of America, and instantaneously, within certainly America, as we know it, would cease to exist. You turn off the electricity, and people say, well, the elite would never allow that. They want all those electronic records so they can certainly follow and track us. But if you look at their Agenda 21, if you haven't heard my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan, you need to get it and listen to it, because the things that they talk about in Agenda 21 were exactly what would happen with an EMP attack. Mass death, certainly changing the structure of our society, lowering living standards, deindustrializing America, getting people out of their cars, getting them onto bicycles. You say, who in their right mind would want to do that? Well, you need to read their material. We have an excellent syllabus. It goes with the talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan. We have another DVD. It's called Agenda 21, The Wretching Transformation of America. It's put out by our good friend Michael Shaw, who is the leading expert on Agenda 21 in the country, knows a lot more about it than I ever will. But Michael's on the front lines. His DVD, Agenda 21, The Wretching Transformation of America. That's a term that certainly Al Gore used, and actually that is what it's all about. And basically my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan, you need to get them, you need to watch them, you need to study them, you need to get our syllabus on Agenda 21, the covert plan. And then, of course, you need to tell others, you need to warn them, you need to warn your family, you need to begin making preparations. Hope and pray that I'm wrong, and I do. But I believe that there's a very real possibility. And I believe there are evil and wicked people out there who would destroy this once great nation because we've turned against God. And basically, of course, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. And then, of course, we have certainly the 4-CD set. It's by the wisdom of Malachi Martin, a Jesuit priest, going into the satanic, actually, the groups working at the highest levels of the Vatican. And within the last few weeks, the Pope has come forward and talked about the gay lobby working at the highest level of the Vatican. Why would they have a gay lobby in the Vatican? Well, we've got them in the Presbyterian Church and the Protestant Church as well. Don't just scoff at the Catholics, because these people, these wicked and evil people, are doing everything they can to destroy Christianity, and they've effectively changed the music and the message of the Catholic and both the Protestant and Catholic churches. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western civilization and Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you listen to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend William Grigg, who is former senior editor of the New American Magazine, who was editor for a time of the Republic Magazine, who certainly is a prolific writer, and you can read his articles at lourockwell.com. That's lourockwell.com. And you can also read at least once a month an article at radioliberty.com, because William writes the monthly Radio Liberty newsletter. I just have so many things we're doing at the present time. I just had to turn it over to him, and I think he does an excellent job. I always look forward to the Radio Liberty newsletter, because, of course, it's written by William Grigg. Hi, William. How are we doing tonight?
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you. I really appreciate your kindness, the opportunity to speak with you and your wonderful audience.
Well, what do you want to be talking about this evening? There's so many things going on. What is you're going to be focused on this evening?
I think that it would be appropriate to talk about the fact that, as many people had predicted, and I think you and I had discussed last week or the week before, Edward Snowden has been charged with espionage in a sealed indictment, a sealed criminal complaint, and the government in charge of Hong Kong, which is, of course, the Chinese government, has been the subject of a request by the Obama administration that they detain Mr. Snowden in custody for extradition in the United States. There's not an extradition treaty, but that doesn't mean that Mr. Snowden is safe where he is right now. There's been some discussion about the possibility that he might seek refuge in Iceland. But it will be interesting to see how long it takes the Obama administration to extradite Mr. Snowden. I think that the deal is probably in the works right now. If not extradition, there's a very good possibility that he would be rendered. Rendition, of course, being a form of kidnapping by the CIA. They're very adept at this. And a third possibility is that he would be the subject of a death warrant, that his name would be inscribed on one of the Tuesday kill lists that are reviewed by Mr. Obama and by his top national security advisors, and that he would simply be dispatched as somebody who had been designated an enemy combatant by the United States government.
And I think it's rather frightening to realize that we do kill people, many times, even without indicting them. In fact, they killed this one gentleman over in Yemen who had never even been indicted. So they didn't try to capture him. They just killed him. But it wasn't so bad. You know, so they said he was a terrorist. But then they killed his 16-year-old son a couple of weeks later. They killed his 16-year-old son. They intentionally murdered an innocent American citizen, an innocent American boy, because they didn't like his father. But what does that tell you about the morality of the people who control our government today? And those of you who haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, need to read it to understand the degree of evil that has grasped the centers of power in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Go right ahead.
You're entirely correct, Dr. Stan, that assassination has become a tool of the federal government. It has long been a tool of the presidency. This is something that has been done and then disavowed over the course of many decades, if not longer. What's new and unsettling, as you point out, Dr. Stan, is the fact that it's being done now as an overt matter of policy.
Well, I think for anybody who doubts this has been going on for a long time, I do have a 4-CD set. It's called Deadly Assassins, where I actually interview a couple of government assassins. One of them is dead now. I think probably both of them are dead now. They've both been one of the bodies washed up on the beaches, according to Joel Huskhausen. After being horribly tortured, is a gentleman I interviewed named Chip Tatum. He had the audacity to say that he was a paid government assassin. William, you go right ahead.
We reviewed, I believe, last week what happened with this fellow in Orlando who was an acquaintance of one of the Tsarnaev brothers, and he had been interviewed by the FBI. And literally at the end of a very long midnight interrogation, he was shot and killed. And the original story is that this individual, who was in his early 20s, and had some experience in mixed martial arts, had attacked one of the FBI agents. They always travel in pairs. In this case, he had at least two FBI agents. You had an unspecified number of Massachusetts state troopers and then some people from the Orlando Police Department. You're probably talking about somewhere between 9 and 12 armed men in this man's apartment in Orlando. He supposedly took after one of the interrogators with a knife and was shot and killed. The next story that emerged was that he had somehow gotten hold of a metal rod of some kind and was beating one of the officers who was interrogating him. And once again, the idea is that he was shot in order to protect the FBI agent who supposedly required hospitalization. That's a claim for which there's no documentation.
My understanding of this man was shot in the back of the head, though, several times.
Shot
in the back of the head? Who was it? Because he's attacking an FBI agent? And basically, then, of course, two of the FBI agents who were involved in that, they were practicing getting out of a helicopter on ropes, and they both fell and they died.
Yeah, they were practicing
isn't
fast
that
roping
an amazing story?
Yeah, they were practicing fast roping operations out of a helicopter and supposedly caught bad weather and then fell into, I believe, the ocean off the coast of Virginia near Quantico and drowned. But one thing that I find really compelling about this, once again, is the fact that this individual was shot in the back of the head. He was shot in a way that wasn't exactly dead center. It wasn't quite in the what you might call the Lubyanka breakfast section of the head. It wasn't the cerebellum, which is what the KGB, I believe it's called the NKVD, used to do by way of summary execution in the basement dungeon cells of the Ivanka Square headquarters during the show trials in the 1930s, but it was the same general vicinity. And, of course, you're not going to have an entry wound at the back of a man's head if he's facing somebody and attacking somebody with a knife or with a club or some other implement. And the story was shared with the public. And, of course, none of the people responsible for these leaks has gone on record. They've all been anonymous leaks to comply as journalists.
Well, hold that thought. Hold that thought. William, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, William is certainly talking about the very, very strange events that have happened the last couple of weeks. And if you believe these, of course, you probably believe anything. But apparently, there was a fellow who is a friend of the older of the two brothers who have been charged with the Boston Marathon bombing. Of course, the older brother, Sidney, was killed, supposedly, in a shootout with the police. And I remember that evening, it was a Friday evening, we were watching Rock Center, a Brian Williams program, and basically they put onto the screen, it was sort of a big blue blob, and they would have all these dots, and they'd suddenly appear on one side of the screen or the other side. And they told us that was a gun battle that was going on between the brothers and the FBI or the local police. And that it turned out that there was no gun battle. They only had one gun. But I saw hundreds of shots being fired, you know, by these two brothers that had one gun with no ammunition. Then we're told the brother, took this gun, comes out from behind the car, and starts walking towards the FBI agents, firing at them. And basically then, of course, he has to stop and reload, and one of the FBI agents comes along and tackles them, and they get him down. And then he ends up getting shot with multiple gunshot wounds. Well, anyway, he had a friend. And basically, this friend was then being questioned about a week ago, week and a half ago, by the FBI, and there were about nine people there. And then, of course, this guy gets a gun, and he tries to shoot the police, and so they have to kill him. And then it turns out he didn't have a gun. He had a knife, and then it turned out he didn't have a knife. He had a rod, and he was going to be certainly attacking this police officer, the FBI agent. And so they had to kill him by shooting him in the back. The back of his head multiple times. Now, if you believe this story, I don't know if you're going to believe the next part of it, and that is that there were two of the FBI agents who were there who within just a very few days were out practicing jumping out of a helicopter on a rope. They were practicing jumping out of a helicopter on the rope, two of them. Two of them jumped out of the helicopter on a rope at the same time, and they fell to their death. The two FBI agents who had been there involved with the shooting of this fellow in self-defense by multiple gunshots to the back of his head. And where was the outcry from the New York Times and the Washington Post and certainly the Wall Street Journal? No, that's what happened. It was just a terrible accident. These two FBI agents just happened to die, certainly just this last week, as they were rappelling from a helicopter on a rope. They were just practicing, you know. Well, go right ahead, William.
Yeah, the two were involved in the killing of this young man, Ibrahim. I believe his name is Ibrahim Todashev. Of course, he's dead. And according to his friends, he was complaining about the possibility that the people who've been interrogating him for the FBI were simply going to dispatch him with extreme prejudice. His father, who lives in Moscow, refers to this as an assassination. The official story is that he was about to take responsibility for a multiple murder in which the Tsarnaev brothers were supposedly implicated. And, of course, we don't know that that's true because he's not around to confirm or deny or object to anything that they say in his behalf. And now the two FBI agents who are involved in this have been disposed of, and so we can't expect that they would disclose what they were involved in.
And, because the amazing thing about the Boston Marathon story is the fact that we're told that basically, suddenly these two boys were carrying backpacks. But if you look at the pictures, all sorts of pictures up on the internet, basically the backpacks that the older brother was wearing, there's no way you could have put a great big, pressure cooker in there. It was a black backpack, but there's no room for a pressure cooker. Look at it. Look at the pictures. And the other one, of course, was carrying a white pack. It wasn't necessarily a backpack. It was some sort of something he had slung over his shoulder, but it was white. And the two that were exploded were both black. So how did the white one become black? How did this small backpack able to carry this large pressure cooker? It doesn't make sense. But the American people are not supposed to ask questions. You're supposed to believe what you're told, because they wouldn't lie to us, would they? They wouldn't kill innocent people. I don't know what happened, but I do know we haven't been told the truth. Go right ahead.
Then there's the fact that this is something which has been discussed and discarded by this same resolutely incurious media recruiter, Dr. Stan. There was the fact that there were people involved in a rather terrorism-specific bomb drill, bombing drill, on the premises on the at the site of the Boston Marathon on the day of the bombing.
And you mean they had the bomb-sniffing dogs out there? They had all sorts of police. Look at the pictures there. There's some fellow who is a runner. He falls down. And basically, look at the picture they have. They got about 8 to 10 police officers there. You see 6 of them surrounding him, and about 4 more just down the street from them. All you can tell the police officers, because they're all wearing yellow, why would they have that many police officers? So they had a marathon race. Basically, Chris, they said that, additionally, we were told that they were having some sort of a trial bombing. That's why they had the bomb-sniffing dogs. Then they said, no, it wasn't true. There were no bomb-sniffing dogs. There was no trial there. They said there was no exercise that morning. Now they've admitted there was an exercise. So was there an exercise or wasn't there? If there was an exercise, why did they deny it specifically? And then why did they admit there was? And ladies and gentlemen, they're playing games with your minds. They're playing games with their minds. They're funneling so much information into your minds. You can't think clearly, and you don't know what to believe. And that's the way you're supposed to be. You're not supposed to understand anything. You're just supposed to blindly accept things, because if you don't, why, you believe there's a conspiracy. You must be some sort of a nut. Go ahead.
On the broad topic here of conspiracy, and dealing, I think, more specifically with suspicious deaths of troublesome people, we have to mention the odd death of Michael Hastings just a couple of days ago, the 33-year-old reporter for Rolling Stone magazine, who, unlike most of the court stenographers in the prestige media, was actually a reporter, and they're somewhat confrontational one as well. He's credited with breaking the stories that brought down General Stanley McChrystal, who is one of the chief engineers, one of the chief architects of this, I guess you'd have to call it, the disposition matrix approach. This is the counterinsurgency model that was used in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and which has now been imported for domestic use here in the United States. And broadly stated, what it is the assumption that you can take people who are considered to be potential threats, label them according to various degrees of dangerousness and disposability, people who could be turned, would be sourced, people who would not necessarily be amenable to becoming a source, that is to say, becoming informants or becoming provocateurs, would be detained, captured, perhaps prosecuted. Those who are incorrigible or considered to be really dangerous would be disposed of. And that's going to be the model for overseas counterinsurgency and for domestic counterterrorism. And this is why it's so important that people understand why it is that the NSA is collecting what's called metadata, because these are ways that these are methods that the federal government can use. The intelligence community, self-styled intelligence community specifically, can use to tie people together to create what's called pattern of life analysis in order to find out which of those three categories people would find themselves shunted into in the event that they come to the malign attention of the powers that be. But Mr. Kelly is somebody who certainly had stepped on the toes of some very important and dangerous people. And so he dies in what's described as a one-car accident, where his car burst into flame in Los Angeles while he's getting ready to meet a representative of Jill Kelly. Now, who's Jill Kelly? Jill Kelly was the so-called socialite from Florida who's very deeply involved with her husband in many of the Roman Empire, the Imperial Roman-style social gatherings there in Florida, among the top brass in Central Command, which deals with the Middle East primarily. She was at the periphery, but the immediate periphery, of the Paula Broadwell and David Petraeus scandal. And Mr. Petraeus almost certainly was somebody who was compromised by the powers that be within the Obama administration and very carefully let out of his position.
Let me just, for our listeners, that is General Petraeus. He was the director of the CIA.
Yeah.
He was having an illicit sexual affair with a woman, and they were listening to all of his conversations. Now, why was the FBI listening to the conversations of the director of the Central Intelligence Agency? Having a sexual liaison is not a federal crime. But ladies and gentlemen, they listen to all of our military because they're frightened to death, of course, that the military might be, a few of them might be patriotic enough to realize that we have a group of criminals in charge of our government, people who, subversive element, a small little group, the Trilateral Commission controls of both political parties. Certainly their people are always in positions of power. And maybe the military down the line might think about doing something. So they listen to all the conversations. They listen to all General Petraeus's conversations, even his very intimate conversations with his mistress. They were listening to a four-star Marine general who has also had some questionable relationships. They listened to everybody, ladies and gentlemen, but specifically the military, because they fear the military. Go right ahead.
Yes, that's one of the things that another NSA whistleblower has talked about, Russell Tice. He was a central and invaluable source way back in 2005 when there were the first wave of leaks about the extent to which the NSA was conducting warrantless wiretapping under the Bush administration. The program, of course, has grown much bigger and much more ominous under Obama. But the Jill Kelly case was what Michael Hastings was investigating. Jill Kelly was at the periphery of the David Petraeus and Paula Broadwell scandal, and suddenly he ends up dead in this mysterious one-car accident, which his car burst into flames. According to eye and ear witnesses, it sounded like there was a bomb going off. And just in the days before this happened, he disclosed to some friends, including some people associated with WikiLeaks, that he thought that the FBI was tailing him and investigating him. We know that the FBI is involved now in summary executions, so put two and two together and tell me what that adds up to.
Well, if anybody doubts it, you know, we have a four-tape set of called Deadly Assassins, where I actually interview government assassins. Two of them are dead today. We'll be back in a moment. William, go right ahead.
In the case of Michael Hastings, it might not have been the FBI, and the reason why I bring this up is because the case of Mr. Todashev down in Orlando does illustrate that the FBI is perfectly capable of carrying out wet work operations. Back in the days of COINTELPRO, they would try to manipulate other people into doing this. One of the things they did when they targeted, for instance, the Black Panther militia, was they tried to set up circumstances in which they would manipulate one personality within that very volatile and unsavory group to attack somebody else who is considered to be troublesome. Martin Luther King Jr. received letters from people in the FBI that were written as if they had been composed by people who were followers of Martin Luther King, who were aware of Martin Luther King's abundant indiscretions and infidelities. And they were trying to manipulate Martin Luther King into committing suicide. So in the 1960s, they tried to find ways of inducing people to kill themselves or inveigling one group of people into attacking another group of people. It seems to me that after, certainly 1995, when the FBI tortured and beat to death Kenny Trenadue in Oklahoma City, and then Eric Holder covered that crime up. It's interesting that Eric Holder is somebody who figures in this so prominently. And then when you have the case of Ibrahim Todashev just a couple of weeks ago, and then Michael Hastings saying that the FBI was investigating him, and then he dies in circumstances that no rational person would consider to be anything other than very suspect. Seems to me that the FBI would be a decent suspect here. It's also worth pointing out, of course, that Michael Hastings had managed to alienate the entire special operations community. And these are people who, among other things, do arrange to take out people through assassination. I mean, it could have been somebody with military intelligence. It could have been somebody with the FBI. It could conceivably have been somebody with the CIA, given the Petraeus connection. But Michael Hastings was looking into those areas where the surveillance state was starting to police conformity within the political elite. That's something that Russell Tice has talked about. He gave an interview recently to a fellow by the name of Peter Collins, who's associated with the Boiling Frogs website that's published by another FBI whistleblower by the name of Sibel Edmonds. And what Ty said is the following. He said they went after, and he said, I know this because I had my hands literally on the paperwork for these sorts of things. They went after high-ranking military officers, speaking once again of the NSA. They went after members of Congress, both Senate and the House, especially on the intelligence committees, on the armed services committees, and some of the judicial. But they went after other ones, too. They went after lawyers and law firms, all kinds of heaps of lawyers and law firms. They went after judges. One of the judges is now sitting on the Supreme Court that I had his wiretap information in my hand. That's probably John Roberts. As you and I have discussed, Dr. Stan, John Roberts is almost certainly compromised in some way. Two are former FISA court judges. Now, let me explain why that's important. The FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court that was created in the late 1970s, is the court that is in charge of offering retroactive, of authorizing in a retroactive fashion the wiretaps, the warrantless wiretaps that are conducted by the NSA. They issue warrants after the wiretaps have begun, and they almost never turn down a request for a wiretap. And the FISA court was the one that, a little while back, one of the judges who, interestingly enough, was also involved in the Obamacare appeal, a judge out of Florida, was sitting on that panel, and he authorized, he signed off, rather, on a judicial order requiring Verizon.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest is William Creek, and he's talking about the FISA court judges. You're basically, you know, certainly if you have a legitimate judicial system with honest men, honest judges, who are using the Constitution as this foundation for the decisions, why you can have an orderly society. But unfortunately, we certainly have turned our back on God. There is no right. There is no wrong. Certainly, our judges do not swear an oath to God when they assume their office. They just swear an oath to who? Is there any, you know, basically to, I guess, an oath to government, to be honest. And why should you be honest? Why, if certainly if there's no punishment, there's no certainly right and wrong, if there is no God, why should any judge be honest? And fortunately, many of the people who are affiliated with the so-called FISA court, which is certainly special courts that authorize certainly the NSA to tap wires, to listen to conversations. Usually after the NSA has already done it, then they come along and they say, oh, sure, what you did is fine. But basically, ladies and gentlemen, our court system has been corrupted because we've turned our back on God as a nation. And I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, when a nation turns its back on God, sooner or later, God turns his back on that nation. Go right ahead, William.
Well, one thing about the Creator is that he's not going to impose himself on any of us in that respect. I mean, obviously, being the sovereign force behind the creation, maintenance of the universe, he does impose himself on us, but he eventually gives us whatever it is that we've chosen. And it's with our actions that we display what's really in our hearts, what our real choices are. And so he eventually gives us what we've chosen. Too many Americans have chosen this. Too many Americans have embraced a cultivated soundbite or meme generated by the national security state that if you have nothing to conceal, you have no reason to fear. If you have nothing to hide, you shouldn't mind that the government is inspecting everything that you do. And of course, that's something that would make perfect sense in a prison society. In a prison society, you have no privacy. And the model of a ideal prison created by Jeremy Bentham, who of course is thoroughly and consummately godless, Jeremy Bentham created the model called the Panopticon, where everything would be perfectly transparent to the tenders of the prison, and you'd never know when you would be under surveillance. That's the real key to this issue. They couldn't necessarily be keeping track of you all the time, but because they wouldn't disclose when you're being monitored, you'd police yourself and police each other. Well, too many people are willing to do the lateral policing on behalf of those who presume to rule us. And what Russ Tice says here is that everybody who is involved in any way in a supervisory capacity to the intelligence organ is being singled out for special scrutiny in order to create what the Russians, the Soviets used to call kompromat, which is a dossier that can be used to blackmail people into compliance. This started with J. Edgar Hoover. Let's not by any means sanitize the history of the FBI and treat this as if this were a recent aberration. It's not. From its very beginning, the FBI has been involved in this sorted and discussing business. It started with Hoover. And they actually got started before the KGB got into the business. That's what's really interesting is that between the FBI and the KGB, who since 1994 have admitted they're in the same racket, the FBI is the senior partner and the more powerful one. It's not to say that the KGB or the FSB, as it now calls itself, is benign. It's not. It's evil, it's vicious, it's vile. It has the blood of tens of millions of people on its hands. But really, the FBI is longer-lived and more professional and probably more competent in what they do. And this FISA court, as I mentioned, is one that retroactively approves what the NSA does in terms of wiretapping. They almost never will deny a warrant request. One of the chief judges involved in this decision that was a legal order to Verizon to turn over all the metadata on its clients was somebody who was involved in the chain of appeals on the Obamacare issue. He sent the matter up to the Supreme Court where John Roberts, literally within the course of a day, changed his position 180 degrees. And there's some evidence, according to what Russell Tice is saying here, I'd consider this to be at least circumstantial evidence, that he was compromised because he was under surveillance by the NSA, and this probably gave the powers that be the leverage to get John Roberts to change his position and to legislate from the bench in order to approve this disgusting, despicable, disastrous socialized medicine plan that's going to put the IRS in charge of life and death decisions for literally everybody in this country.
But, of course, it's interesting how he justified that. Basically, of course, the Obama administration said, look, this is not a tax. I mean, Obamacare is not a tax on people, and we wouldn't do that. We don't have the authority to do it. And John Roberts said, oh, yes, it is a tax. I mean, and the federal government has the... Certainly, there's nothing in the Constitution that gives them the authority to regulate health care or to provide for health care. But this is a tax, and the federal government is justified in taxing. So even though Obama says it isn't a tax, it is a tax, and that's constitutional. So it's the Obamacare is constitutional, and everybody shook their head and said, what's he talking about? Well, all we can say is that they've laid the foundation. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You know, basically, of course, it's very interesting. William, once they have something on you, then, of course, you belong to them. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, General Petraeus, formerly the director of the CIA, they have things on him. They've been listening to his telephone conversations. They publicly humiliated him. He was forced to resign from the CIA. But now they're going to assign him to other jobs. He's been given some very responsible position. I think it's with some sort of a corporation that is working very closely with the government. But now they own General Petraeus. He will do exactly what he's told to do. Because if he doesn't, why, they know a great deal about him. And I think this is the way that it is with so many people in government. And if they're not involved in an illicit sexual affair, they will send a woman to seduce them. Mm-hmm. There is no question in my mind that Monica Lewinsky was certainly what she did. Certainly was to seduce Bill Clinton. Now, not that he wasn't seducible, but no woman in her right mind would have a beautiful dress with that was stained, and she wouldn't set it out to get it cleaned. Women love beautiful dresses, and they ordinarily, if there's something for imperfection on them, they get them cleaned. But she didn't bother to do that. Nobody's ever bothered to ask, why didn't she have her dress cleaned? Go right ahead.
Yeah, there are the souvenirs that would have been more appropriate, I suppose. But what you're talking about, Dr. Stan, once again, is something you file under what the Russians call kompromat. I've shared this story before, but it's appropriate in this context. One of my friends from southeastern Idaho, I knew from my high school and from my college days, was elected as a Democratic senator from Idaho, which is, of course, a very rarefied thing. And he talked about an orientation lecture he got in 1985 under Tip O'Neill, who at the time was the Speaker of the House. And one of the first things that Tip O'Neill said to the new freshman Democrats is, if your wives aren't here, get them here immediately. Bring them here. Do not spend your time here in Washington as an unattached married man, because if you do that, within a week, each one of you will be compromised. Now, Tip O'Neill is not my favorite politician, but obviously, ideologically and otherwise, there are light years that separate us. But he was a husband and a father, and he was a devout Catholic. And he was somebody who did not want to see these people ruin their lives, because he understood that within a week, each one of those men most likely would have found himself thoroughly compromised, because they're all compromisable, and their lives would have been ruined. And that's not something as a human being he wanted to see happen to them.
Hold that thought. Hold the thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. What he was just saying, that a friend of his who had been elected to Congress as a Democrat, and this woman had the first day she was in office in Washington, D.C., Tip O'Neill got all the freshman congressmen there and said to them, and addressing the men, if you are a married man, get your wife here. Do not be here, because if you get her here, because you do not want to be in Washington, D.C., as a single married man without your wife, because within a week you will be compromised. What was he talking about? Why, they would send a woman to compromise him, and men are attracted to attractive women, and basically that's how they control men. They get women, they hire them to compromise men, and because Tip O'Neill, not necessarily certainly William's favorite politician or mine, but he did recognize the fact he did not want his Democratic congressman, freshman congressman, compromised, because then they wouldn't be able to vote the way he wanted them to. They would have to vote the way they were told to vote by the people who controlled the information that they had had an illicit affair with a woman. And they could certainly destroy their marriage. They could destroy them publicly. They could humiliate them before their family. And Tip O'Neill was warning them, you'll be compromised within a week. Get your wife here. Go ahead. I think that's a fascinating story. I never heard that before.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you point out, because of the fact this would destroy the partisan leverage he could exercise if they were to be induced by blackmail into voting, rather than voting as a power block of the Democratic Party, that's something that would undermine Tip O'Neill's power base. And I do think that as well, there was this element of personal concern on the part of Tip O'Neill. At the bottom, of course, before he became a politician, he was a very different individual, and he has seen that happen. He's seen that happen to people, including people for whom he had great affection. And I think just as a human being with a residue of decency, he didn't want to see that happen. Of course, it's something that undermines party loyalty, whether you're talking about Republicans or Democrats. And in order to keep the illusion of competition running, they are allowed, the leaders, the two branches of the establishment party, they are allowed a certain free rein when it comes to pursuing the partisan interests of their respective blocs. But this is something that is well known and has been well known for as long as there have been politicians and political assemblies. There have been people who have been working to compromise and blackmail and exert leverage upon those who have the decision-making role. The thing that Russell Tice is talking about is that we reached a point in the degradation of what had been a republic into something akin to a people's republic, that is to say, a Soviet-style soft totalitarian state.
Well, you know, I think it was so interesting on the Patriot Act. When they tried to get the Patriot Act in right after the 9/11 bombing, I mean, it was just so terrible, and it was going to take away so much freedom. Despite all the emotion that went along with the attack on the World Trade Center, Congress wouldn't vote for it. They were at 15 or 20 votes short. Now, ordinarily, Chris, if you bring a vote up for a issue up for a vote and it's voted down, why, you can't bring it back again. But you see, the people in charge don't believe in the rules at all. What they did is that they went out and they bribed about 25 congressmen. I think they put out something like $25 billion of programs for their individual districts. You know, kind of give you $1 billion, a couple of billion dollars in your district. That'll certainly create a lot lot of prosperity, who gets reelected, and suddenly within a week after putting out $25 billion or more to bribe the congressman, why, of course, then they were able to get the Patriot Act through. This is how it really works in Washington, D.C., ladies and gentlemen. So forget about all of your idealism. Look at it with reality, and the story of the Patriot Act is a beautiful example that he who has the gold rules. The golden rule, he who has the gold rules. Go ahead.
Well, in this case, it's more a question of who can deploy the lead on the battlefield and who can use the cudgels of the redistribution of the state in order to direct wealth from one party to another party to the benefit of the person who's doing the redistribution, because it's not as if we have gold being employed anymore. But in the metaphorical sense, you're exactly right, Dr. Stan, that is the, I guess you call it the political perversion of the golden rule, the pyrite rule, because it's all based on foolishness. We're talking about fool's gold, not the real article. But when we're talking about the Patriot Act, it's useful to point out that chief sponsor of that measure, Jim Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin, in recent weeks has been talking about what the NSA is doing in terms of all-encompassing surveillance of telephone conversations, electronic communications, things of this sort. And he's appeared on a number of different discussion programs to offer his anguished and apparently earnest opinion that this is a perversion of the Patriot Act, that this exceeds what he had authorized or what his measure had authorized. I suspect that he didn't see the text of that bill, because nobody who voted for that measure actually read the bill. The bill was not read until later by, I think, Ron Paul was the first and maybe the only in Congress to read the entire Patriot Act. But it was voted on by the House before the actual provisions were finished, before the text of the bill was completed. So I don't think that Jim Sensenbrenner actually knows what was in the bill that was put out under his name. And now here we are, nearly a dozen years later, and we're discovering that there are all kinds of trapdoors and codicils in the Patriot Act that were ignored at the time, partially, as you say, Dr. Stan, out of this frantic desire to appear to be doing something in the aftermath of September 11th, but partially as well as a result of bribery, and most likely as the result of some other inducements of the sort that are more akin to blackmail than bribery. This measure was passed. It was passed sight unseen. It was passed being unread. And it has certainly enough headroom for the kinds of things that the NSA is doing right now. The Patriot Act is the thing that followed what remained of the Constitution. It was, in a sense, the equivalent of the Enabling Act that was passed after the Reichstag fire in the German Reichstag in 1933. And one of the really interesting things about what happened after the Reichstag fire, with the consolidation of power into the National Socialist government, they called it Gleichschaltung, which is a word that basically means putting things onto a track or hooking, as I understand, hooking cars onto a train, onto a locomotive, and then setting it in motion. What happened is that there had been in the Weimar Constitution, during the democratic, if you will, interregnum between World War One and the Nazi takeover in 1933, there was a provision in the Weimar Constitution that allowed the chief executive chancellor of the German government to suspend the Constitution in the event of insurrections or dire emergencies. It was actually used during the early 1920s when you had outright street warfare between communist militias and Free Corps, which were groups of demobilized soldiers who were attached to nationalist organizations, including some that eventually coalesced in the National Socialist Government. So there had been precedents for a president suspending the Weimar Constitution in 1933. Hitler was able to use the instruments of the Weimar Constitution and the ratification, the fearful ratification of the Reichstag, in order to consolidate his power legally, at least under what they were referred, what they described as the law, what they were required to refer to as the law. We're seeing something similar happen today through the Patriot Act and the authorization for use of military force, which was enacted supposedly to justify the Bush administration's invasion and occupation of Afghanistan. The limited purpose of this, we were told, was to to go into Afghanistan, find bin Laden, who's somebody the Taliban were trying to get rid of in the month leading up to September 11th. They're actually trying to get rid of Osama bin Laden. They didn't want him there. He was an unwelcome guest. He was attracting undesired attention and unwanted hostility. The Taliban made several offers to the Bush administration to get rid of the guy, and the Bush administration wasn't interested. And, of course, immediately after September 11th, the Bush administration expedited not the capture of bin Laden, but the emergency removal of the bin Laden family from the United States, people who could have been looked upon as at least persons of interest or material witnesses in a horrific mass murder. If indeed Osama bin Laden were the chief suspect in 9/11, the FBI never categorized him as such, which is something I find really interesting. But the thing is, the authorization for use of military force and the Patriot Act taken together are basically the founding charter of a new system of government that we have today. Because every time any president since September 2001, there have been two, there have been George W. Bush and Barack Obama, anytime a president wants to aggrandize his powers in order to imprison somebody or to torture somebody or to grant commutation or to destroy some kind of investigative oversight of crimes of that sort, or to bring about the summary execution of somebody by a drone strike, the president will invoke one of those two measures, either the Patriot Act for surveillance and warrantless wiretapping, or the authorization for use of military force to justify such things as the drone program. And under these two measures, essentially, you have a combination of doctrines that have nullified the constitutional restraints on what the executive branch can do. But what's going on with the NSA program and what Russell Tice was talking about in terms of the collection of intelligence against these targeted people who are responsible is that those policymakers who in their official capacity might actually provide checks or balances on this exercise of executive power are all being monitored and are all subject to blackmail. Which means that, in a sense, our system is, if anything, more corrupt than that of Weimar Germany. Because in Weimar Germany, at least, they had the decent excuse of an infirm constitution. They had a constitution with a self-nullifying clause that permitted the executive to suspend it when it was most needed. It's something that the Supreme Court pointed out in, I believe, was Ex parte Milligan after the war between the states. That had to do with the habeas corpus guarantee. I'm paraphrasing that decision, but it was either Milligan or Merriman. I think it was probably Milligan. Supreme Court said that the Constitution is the law of the land in times of peace and in war, and it's especially in times of war that the Constitution becomes critical. It's not that you try to find some way out of constitutional restrictions because we're at war. It's that you don't prosecute a war in any way other than what the Constitution prescribes, and you're particularly fastidious about following the Constitution in times of war. Well, we've reached, of course, that point that was described in one of Cicero's essays, in which he said, and I think the Latin was inter arma enim silent leges, which is in times of war, the laws fall silent. And so the laws have been mowed down, and we're left basically with nothing but executive force, which is rationalized now as something that has been approved by the other branches of the government. Obama, when Snowden made his first disclosures, Obama gave a press conference where he said, look, this has been approved by the other two branches of the government, and if that's not good enough for the public, we're going to have some problems. Now, that's a really ominous thing to say, because what he's saying is not, well, if the public doesn't approve, we're going to have to change course. What he's saying is that if the public doesn't approve, we're going to have problems with the public. You know, if the people lose the confidence of the government, we're going to have to dissolve the people and elect a new one, as Bertolt Brecht said in a cynical, satirical play back in the 1950s about the East German communist government. Well, we've reached that point now where Obama's saying, listen, the larger subtext of what he's saying is, listen, don't bother me with questions of constitutionality. All the power has been consolidated in the executive branch. Both the judiciary and the legislature are thoroughly compromised. They're always under scrutiny. People within the executive branch who might cause trouble are disposable. Look what happened to David Petraeus. The fact is, all power inheres in the presidency. And what the president decides decides is the law of the land. You know, law consists of two lines above my signature, Saddam Hussein once said. In terms of what happens in a communist country, of which there are only a few overt examples, take a look at communist Cuba. Fidel Castro, in the early days of his reign, when the firing squads were running several hours a day, every day, said that he was the vessel of the general will. He was the vessel of the will of the Cuban people, which meant that his every word, his every action represented democracy in action. You know what? That's pretty much what Barack Obama's claim, George Bush's claim before him as well, is that by virtue of being elected president, inheriting this vast and sprawling apparatus of surveillance and regimentation and summary execution, and by virtue of the fact that nobody in any of the other branches of the government is willing in any way to limit or frustrate the exercise of this power. Indeed, the only time that you hear criticism of Obama from the Republicans, until recently in any case, was that he was insufficiently ruthless in carrying out his mission as the grand avenger through the Homeland Security state. The war on terror.
But you know, William, basically, of course, I do not believe that Obama runs sure. our government. Basically, his first national security advisor was a man named General James Jones, who just happened to come from the membership roles of the Trilateral Commission. General James Jones was actually then replaced by a man named Thomas Domelon. And basically, Domelon just happened to come from the membership roles of the Trilateral Commission. There's only 87 members of the North American chapter. Thomas Domelon was then replaced by a woman named Susan Rice, who just by coincidence happened to have been a member of the Trilateral Commission before she became the American ambassador to the United Nations. I really rather suspect that Obama does what he's told to do, and basically if he did not, why they'd send him on a trip to Dallas. Because I believe there's a powerful force behind him. Now, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your articles, how they can get your books, and how they can get your PayPal button.
Dr. Stan, I really appreciate that. And obviously, I agree with you. Every president is a frontman for an oligarchy. True of every dictator, too. My chief outlet is the Pro Libertate blog at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or go to a search engine such as Google or Startpage or some other search engine. Type in William N. Grigg, and the first return should be Pro Libertate. I post there about once a week or more frequently if my schedule permits. And at the bottom of every essay, there's a PayPal button for those who have access to PayPal and are interested in helping out. I do appreciate everything that you've done, Dr. Stan, and that so many generous members of your audience have done to support me and my family. This is my primary means of supporting my family is the Pro Libertate blog. I also post on lewrockwell.com, lewrockwell.com, quite frequently. There's a piece that was posted there yesterday on the terrible situation in Detroit. And my radio program, Freedom is All the Radio, can be heard at 8 o'clock Mountain Time, Saturday night, at libertyroundtable.com. That's one word, libertyroundtable.com. There's a Listen Live button up in the upper right-hand corner of the page. 8 o'clock every Saturday night, 7 o'clock California time, or 9 o'clock Central, at libertyroundtable.com.
Okay, and certainly if you're in a position to help William, he's well worthwhile. He's certainly one of the most articulate spokesmen we have for the cause of freedom, certainly. And of course, you'll want to read my newsletter because actually it's written by William Grigg. And we'll be back in just a moment here with William to wrap up the program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program, and then we'll let you get to bed.
I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. And it's always a blessing to be with you on Friday night. I do appreciate everything you've done for me and for my family and what you've done for our country as well. It's becoming more and more difficult to recognize our country, isn't it? It's something that leaves me quite melancholy or despondent, quite frankly, as I consider just how desperately wrong things have gone within living memory. I was talking earlier today with a couple of my friends who are retired law enforcement officers about how vastly different the culture of law enforcement has become just since 1994. In less than 20 years, really. That's less than a generation. Things have changed dramatically. That's mostly a matter of mindset, not just the material inducements and the bribery and the regulatory changes that have been made. There's a different mindset. All this, of course, begins with that mysterious piece of engineered technology that we call the human mind. Of course, we don't know exactly what separates the mind from the soul or where the interface is with the body. That's a mystery that only the Creator knows for sure. But there's something about the way that people are programmed to think that we have to come to grips with. People are programmed, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, by experts, people behind the scenes who are far different personalities from what most of us would assume. They're the ones who emit the talking points. They're the ones who engage in the verbal architecture to get people thinking about things, speaking about things before they think about them. And words are the only ways that we can think. They're the ones who engineer the language so as to subvert our mind and bewitch our intellect and to lead us into the belief, for instance, that if we have nothing to hide, we have nothing to fear from a government that presumes to pry into everything that we're doing. The thing is, we have to reclaim the sovereignty over our minds. That's something that our Creator intends for us to do. He gave us full-scale plenary jurisdiction over the sovereignty of our minds within the mortal frame. And too many Americans have been willing to surrender that to people who do not have our best interests in mind, certainly don't have the best interests of our country in mind. So we have to reclaim our minds. We free our minds, then the rest will follow.
I think you're absolutely right. And basically, our job is to get people to think, to begin to use their minds independently, and to realize that there really are evil and wicked people out there who will kill hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people. And they've already well underway, those of you who haven't heard my talk on population control, basically, you need to get the material. You need to understand that the genocide is already underway. Well, William, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week at the same time.
Thank you. God bless you, Dr.
Good night. God bless. Okay, well, that was William Grigg. Hope you enjoyed our conversation with him. We're living in trying times, and certainly you need to be involved, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And so our plea to you is get informed, get involved, and help us get the word out. And basically, of course, you may not be able to do talk radio like I do or like William does, but you can talk to people all the time and constantly bring issues up, ask them questions, try to get them to think about what's going on today. Ask them simply to go up to the internet and watch Building 7 come down. There's the Building 7 in the complex there in Washington, D.C., where the Twin Towers were. And note them to ask, why does the center of the roof of Building 7 cave in before the building comes down? Well, of course, that's because you take out the center the support so the walls will fall in. That's how you do a controlled demolition. At a Building 7 was a controlled demolition, then they killed all those people. But then why should we be surprised? They wanted to kill many, many more. They wanted the people to stay in the South Tower. They kept telling them not to leave. Do not leave. There's nothing to worry about. They wanted to kill them. It's just like what happened certainly at Pearl Harbor when we left our boys there to be killed, but they needed an excuse to get us into World War I. Of course, they killed the people in the Twin Towers. They wanted to kill 6,000. Remember initially they said there were 6,000 who died, and then it was 5,000, then 4,000. Then they realized they'd failed. They'd only killed a little less than 3,000. But that was used then to get us into a war that we're currently engaged in. But the trouble is this is bankrupting our nation. And I will tell you that the elite are suddenly very, very concerned about what's going on. And they're really talking about the real fact that if something doesn't happen, why the whole financial structure of our society is coming down. And now they're suddenly beginning to talk about pulling out of the Middle East. And basically, of course, I believe this is going to happen down the line. Of course, we're setting this thing up for a major war down the line. Everything is in place. But at least temporarily, we're going to be pulling back. However, there are going to be terrible things that are going to happen to America, because I think God is going to bring his judgment on this country. And basically, if you haven't heard our 4-CD set or our DVD on the threat of an EMP attack, you need to get it. get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't heard our CD set on the secret government or on secret societies, they're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Of course, we hope that many of you want to get our secret government special, which gives us a number of different tape and CD sets that will take you into the secret societies that really do exist. If you haven't heard the DVD for CD set, The New Order of the Barbarians, here's where one of the people who is an integral part of this comes forward and told a group of doctors exactly what was going to happen. You can only not only hear the four CDs, The New Order of the Barbarians, we actually have a transcript of it. You want to read and reread and read again. We have the information. Do you have the courage to get it, to read it, and to help us? And certainly, you can go to our website, watch many of our DVDs without charge. You can certainly see listen to our radio programs there without charge. You can read our newsletters, many of them written by William Grigg, without charge. You can read my treatise on the population control agenda. And we recommend you read that and read it and reread it again and understand they intend to kill off most of the population of the world, including you and your family, unless you're prepared. That's the Population Control Agenda. You can get it at my website, or you can certainly get it up on the internet. Just put in Population Control Agenda, Dr. Monteith, or Radio Liberty, or certainly just Population Control Agenda. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. If you get anything else, ask for a free copy of Population Control Agenda. 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection till Monday. May the Lord be with you.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour radio show. It is 21 June 2013. It is Friday. We made it. It is all about the truth. Doing the next right and honorable thing. Are you getting your gardens growing? Are you ready for whatever? I don't think people are even